Most financial advisors follow the industry playbook. Elite advisors choose a different path. I'm Sten Morgan. Welcome to the Elite Financial Advisor Podcast, where top advisors share the strategies, mindsets, and the stories behind building a better business, adding more value, and the courage to grow through resistance. Because becoming an elite advisor is not about working harder and longer. It's about choosing a better path.
That great Stephen Pressfield quote, most of us have two lives, the life we live and the unlived life within us. And between those two stands resistance. I believe that's so true of everybody out there. And ultimately, we get to be curators of human flourishing in their lives. We get to help them dance with the resistance so they can get to that other life faster.
That's a brutal lift. And that's why there's only, what is it, a 9 or 19% chance of making it in the industry, which it kind of disgusts me, to be honest with you, because I'm sick of those stats.
It's a great targeting strategies is get the benefits packets of the 10 biggest companies within an hour of you and read them. And I don't care how you have to get that benefits packet, find an employee and buy it off them, like at all cost, because that's gold if you can read through it. We have a great episode for you today. This is the Elite Advisor Podcast. Today we've been hanging out with Wes and Gavin, two good buddies of mine, and they are both top producers in the country for their firms. We're going to unpack prospecting. I get a lot of questions from advisors at every stage of their career where the ultimate goal is, man, I just want to get referrals from my clients. Like, I don't want prospecting to be as hard as it has been in my career so far. Our business is always challenging. We're business owners. But today we're going to just talk really openly about our prospecting journey, things we've learned, really practical things you can start doing tomorrow to get better at, one, prospecting as a system, but also just your confidence around asking for referrals. How do you communicate the value of what you do so people naturally want to send people your way? So we'll dive in. Let's hang out with Wes and Gavin. Welcome to this episode of the Elite Advisor Podcast. Two studs with us today, Gavin and Wes. Good to see you, boys.
Great to be here, buddy.
What's up, brother?
All right. So most people listening probably heard of you guys. We know you guys have arrived. You own yachts, multiple houses. So now, the good news is you guys still actively run great practices. And so when I was thinking through about doing a jam out episode on prospecting, it's one of the biggest questions we get. I thought we could get vulnerable, get real, kind of share our current playbook with everybody when it comes to filling our pipeline and generating high quality business. So let's dive in. Wes, you start. When I say prospecting, what trauma comes up in you?
Yeah, probably the early days, man. The early days were tough. You know, I came in the old large insurance store where, and I was 24. And the great thing about that is, you know, I don't care how good your ideas are when you're 24, you're 24. And they're like, how many people have you done this for? You're like, well, none, but you could be the first, you know, and people are, it's like being your doctor's first surgery. Nobody wants that, you know? And so, but it was the old, you inherit a process. And I think that's what most people do. We inherit a process to do anything. And what we were given is, hey, come up with these 200 people that you know that are somewhat in your sphere of knowledge that know you, and then call them and tell them this, which was pretty much this. It was, hey, Sten, Gavin, I've made a change in what I'm doing these days. I'd love to come by and talk to you about it. And it was pretty much that. It was like, hey, can I just talk to you about what I'm doing? And you'd get a couple of different responses. You go, well, what are you doing? And so I had to answer for that. And then some people were like, yeah, sure. I'll listen to it. But I would say those early
answer to that question, like, I don't want to tell you yet.
Yeah. I don't want to take it. Be a secret as long as possible. Cause it takes longer for you to say no. And you get two types of people with that approach. I mean, and it's just what you do if you don't have another way. Or, and I think this long-term, this thing to get better, guys, if you find yourself there, just understand there is better on the other side of this. But in those days, you need reps and you need to be with people and yet nobody's knocking on your door. You know, it's like you are knocking on their door through a phone and you're saying, you want to come over to my house and I'll cook you. You know, we'll have a conversation in the living room. Maybe you like that enough to where we can actually eat dinner together, you know? So it's kind of like that, but I would say they come in two forms. They are either tolerant, right? That's one where they're like, I like Wes. I know him from what we used to do. Sure. I'll be with you, but they're not, certainly not like going, oh, I can't wait to see what you have because we need it. The other is they are resistant. And just like you may come to the meeting and then they're there, and you've both been to these meetings where you're like, how did I get in this meeting? What? Why did I choose to say yes to this? And but they're certainly not intrigued or like engaged at the front side. And I think there's ways I would do it different for sure. If I was starting over again today, just language, bottom line, you still have to knock on the door. You still have to make the request if you're not having a flood of people ask to meet with you every week, but there's a way to get there too. And so that was those days, and they were just bad. Like, if I look back on it, things that I disliked most about, I love what we get to do. And I love the state we're in now, but it took a while to get there, to just go from that meeting with tolerant people, but you got to be intrigued. Some of the resistant people, you even got to be tolerant, then intrigued and engaged. But man, it's a grind of, I'm just glad I was 24. Because I have a lot of energy
expenses.
For that.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that, man. Gavin, how about you, man? What comes up? And I know all of us have like a similar background of kind of brute forcing to get in the business.
Yeah.
But what comes up? Yeah, you
can always tell the insurance broker dealer guys. So we started out, it was called the Grantham system or one card system. And so I'm very thankful for it, actually. Like, I hated it too, Wes. Like, golly.
Yeah.
I would not go back and do it again, but I'm thankful I did it. And it just made the process very easy, but it's very difficult, you know. And we got referred leads. So found a person that knew and liked us and asked them who they knew and asked them if they mind, you know, nominating us to talk to that next person. And we called them and some said yes and some said no. And somehow some people bought, and then somehow we got here. And then, you know, I don't know another way you could do it starting out when we did, like Facebook and social and like all that wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
2007, like it is today. So I'm very thankful for the system. I'm thankful for the groundwork that other people, you know, laid into that. We have a little bit different way now, but not like totally different, you know. But yeah, it's just referred leads is how I got started, and it worked somehow.
Wes, I liked how you said like you inherit a system. And I think there's probably a lot of people doing stuff now and they don't really know where it came from. And I think it's just good to have the awareness of like, I didn't come up with this. I haven't even really stopped to like question if this is the right way to do it. I'm doing something.
Yeah.
And I think where I annoyed a lot of people along the way is like that kind of status quo system. I was like, it'll kind of work. It's working, but there's got to be a better way. And I just didn't have a mentor that was like, hey, Sten, stay the course. It'll work. I just kind of bothered my managing directors enough. And they're like, dude, we can't approve that through compliance. Stop doing that. And then I was like, all right, I'm leaving. And so part of me, I'm thankful for that kind of like rebellious contrarian spirit because it helps you do things out of the norm.
Yeah.
But when I do hang out with other advisors, I mean, when I used to go to these big conferences and I was at, you know, Raymond James, Northwestern, some people kind of wore as a badge of honor, like the long grinded out method that eventually worked.
Yeah.
And I know all of our practices have evolved that like we were doing better versions of that now. But Gavin, how do you, when you hang out with a bunch of people, you're one of the top guys in the country, like, do you find yourself pushing back against kind of like that model? Like there's a better way to do it, or is there still part of you that's like, man, if it works, keep doing it?
I think coming into our firm and going through a career path is a better way today. And I wish I had that when I grew up. That did not exist. They didn't have firms out there hiring people and taking them through a career path, you know, with salaries and systems and process. So yeah, I would push back that there's a better way. But also, like, if you're starting off, you know, it's not a bad, man, it's hard to put myself in a position of a 24-year-old again today.
Yeah.
But to be successful 24-year-old out on your own in the financial service world, selling insurance and investment products, it's a brutal lift. And that's why there's only, what is it, a 9 or 19% chance of making it in the industry, which it kind of disgusts me, to be honest with you. And some people say that is like a badge of honor, like there's only a 9% chance of making it. Like, that's not good.
Maybe we're
like,
doing something wrong.
Yeah, CPAs don't walk around like, we got a 9% chance of making it.
That's right.
So that's why I'm like, honestly, we started doing, we do it High Wealth, because I'm sick of those stats.
Yeah. How big is your team now?
So we're at 12 advisors, and we just hired 4 more that starts June 1st. So we try to batch them. So we'll be up to 16 advisors.
Yeah, I saw your, maybe, I don't know if it was your recent picture, but I'm like, you guys are going to have to use like the panorama setting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Scan across.
Gavin needs to lay down on the front.
Yeah. Just get a big, or they hold you. They hold you. I think that'd be better.
That's right. Wes, how about you, man? When you think about that, like, there's so many, I would say, and I'm just going to use this word for now, like average ways to get to this business, which to Gavin's point, doesn't seem to be working that well at scale. But then there's some people that just kind of survive. And eventually it's like, this is the best job ever.
Yeah.
What came up when you was kind of unpacking that?
Yeah, no. So I think about this a lot because we've got, my son is graduating this year, as you know, Stan, we talked about it. And, you know, as I told him, so you've got a great degree from TCU, finance degree, you've got a CFP already, and you've got your SIEs worked through to get all that stuff. And just what can you do to create value for people should be your number one concern, because nobody cares. Nobody cares about all that stuff. That's great. You're not that useful to these people. You're a young person, but how do you get valuable? How do you think in terms of value creation for the people you're working for? And I think that was a big tipping point, which really accelerated us, is just creating a process that you take clients through that's so valuable. It almost makes asking for referrals irrelevant, because these days we get, I mean, I bet it's three a week, people reaching out to us saying, hey, Wes, you did this work for so-and-so. We'd love to connect with you and see if there's some opportunity there. And we introduce them to the team. I don't work individually with all those folks, but even they do come generally through me first. And it's so, they're knocking on the door. That has been my goal. Like, I didn't know it was the goal, but that was my goal, is have them knock on the door. Hey, can we come talk and see if we want to eat dinner together? And the way is be valuable. So what are you doing? And have something to say to people. Like, what is it that you could do? And you can go through any of the things you teach in any of your classes that will give them seven or eight things that today are unusual, will be very valuable. Nobody else in our industry is talking about it. And they're going, this is different than my experience I've had anywhere else. And the more you do that over time, it's like a snowball just going downhill. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger and more fun. Let's just face it. I mean, it's a lot more fun to meet with people that ask to meet with you than ask people to meet with you, right?
And I know.
I would say the other thing is this, is being really good at answering the question, what do you do, in a way that is value creation. And, you know, I teach this all the time, wrote a book about it years ago, but, you know, most people, what do they do? They're asked the question, what do you do? And they give a label or they give a book report. The label is like, well, I'm financial advisor, money manager, you know, whatever they say, insurance advisor. And that's great. That's not what you do. That is what you're calling yourself. And it's common at best. They probably have one of you or have had an experience with one of you. So they put you in that common bucket. Or you give a book report where you're like, and it's just like a mile long, add value to decline of the, and it's just, oh my God, they don't want anything to do with you by the time you're done.
Yeah.
Or you can take the approach. I learned this from Andy Stanley, Communicating for Change, one of my great favorite books out there. He said, it's where I say you state the problem you solve or the opportunity you help seize in the form of a question. So if you were to ask me, Gavin says, Wes, what do you do? I said, well, you know, it's easy to have a lot of your money disappear to the tax system. And I just wait. And they said, yeah, I do. The clients we want to work with do, at least. They're like, I know. Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I said, well, we help people with things like that. We own a financial planning company. We work with people that own businesses to help them identify and pursue profitable financial opportunities. To which generally they're going to ask me a follow-up question. They're going to be like, so you're like a CPA, or how do you do that? Doesn't matter. They've invited you to keep dancing with them, not for them. Mm-hmm. And then you say, well, yeah, we start by asking a lot of questions, trying to find out where you are from a financial standpoint, family standpoint, and really about what lights you up. Like, what are you working on now that you're excited about? What future are you trying to create? Because once we know that, we can have some great dialogue around the areas of planning we specialize in that may be most useful. And since I've said that on airplanes, I've said it at parties, I've said it at social events that we are in. And I'm going to tell you, you get a way different response than if you have a state answer the question, I'm a financial advisor, I'm a money manager, you know, totally different.
What do you, when I was hearing you say that, there's like what to say and then like how you say it.
Yeah. Yeah. So you state the problem you solve in the form of a question.
Yeah.
Because when people used to ask me, what do you do? It's kind of like saying, hey, dance. right? And you're going dance, and I hope they like my dance. And you're talking a lot to them. You're almost entertaining them, but I want them to dance with me. I want this to be a dialogue, right? Not a presentation, a conversation. So if you just flip it to a question, and again, the hardest part for people when we're teaching this is like, but we do so much more than that. I'm like, yeah. And you'll have the lifetime if you end up working with the client to talk about it, sure. But they're never going to be there. And don't say something lame, right? Don't be like, you know, it's awesome. You're how often your portfolio gets out of balance. You know, nobody cares, right? It's like this.
Gavin, cross that one off your list, bro. Don't use that.
Yeah, cross that one off the list. Don't leave it that anymore. But you, tax, everybody cares about tax that is going to be our client.
Sure.
And so it is one of the things we do. It's one of the big problems we help solve. And it is a tension people are carrying around with them that you wake up when you just stay there like, whoa, yes. And then you say, you associate yourself with solutions. Yeah, we help people with that. We help people with that. I own a financial planning company. We work with people that own businesses to help identify and pursue profitable financial opportunities.
Yeah.
So they just put you in this whole other category. They don't have a box for it, which is very, very... So that could be a person you've never met before. No one's referred you to them. You're out in the world. Or if you're on the phone, you're a new advisor and you're talking to them and you're doing the thing we used to do back in the day where you're like, hey, I recently made a career change. And you say, hey... I'd love, Gavin, what you said, to join a firm of people that are just doing it right. Because they also, again, they kind of know if you're new, you're probably not going to be as great as you could be. You say, yeah, that's why I joined a firm that's 25 years old. It has absolute great people here that do some amazing work. Like, what kind of work? Well, you know, it's easy to have a lot of your money disappear in the taxes. Mm. Yeah, well, they help people we help people with things like that. And then you do the same thing, but it's a way better language. And I'm going to come by and put you on the newsletter. I'm going to come by and whatever is the other stuff that we used to say. You know, if you're persistent, no matter what you say, you'll end up probably gutting it out. But man, it's way more pleasurable to do it a way that's just more fun and they like you and it's a conversation and it feels different.
Yeah. Raise your hand if you've ever been to a financial advisor event that didn't really change you. Maybe the speakers were interesting, maybe you had a few good conversations, but when you got home, nothing about your business actually improved. I've been to a lot of these events over the years. Events full of inspiration, but short on practical strategies you can actually use. The advisor of the future knows how to clearly communicate their value, prospect with intention, and deliver financial planning advice clients actually understand. That's why we built How to Charge Live. This isn't an event built around hype or theory. It's an event built for advisors by advisors. 1,000 advisors have attended How to Charge Live, including advisors with more than 20 years of business experience. And over, we hear the same thing. This is the best advisor event I've ever attended. I want to personally invite you to join me at my office in Franklin, Tennessee this October for 2 days focused on helping you build more valuable business. I'm going to walk you through my entire process, how to communicate your value well, how to add value through fee-based financial planning, and how to create a framework to help you scale your business faster. Seats are limited, so visit howtochargelive.com to secure your seat now. Gavin, how are you teaching your team? Because ever since I've known you, you're like a fun guy, you're a confident guy. But I think when I was here in West, it was like, you have to know what to say, which you can rehearse and practice, but it's like how you say something matters. Like, are you making me feel something? Are you inspiring me? Because you bring on these younger advisors, I'm guessing the quicker you can get them confident and learn how to like communicate well, the better.
Yeah. It's when they onboard with us, so we have this whole process of they have a national sales class they go to, then they have Highland Wealth Academy that they go to. So they're gonna go to, you know, our guys and get taught. But then when they get out in the field, the two things that I think we're doing the best is number one, they're gonna be in client meetings off the bat with veteran advisors as second chairs. Because Kitsis did a study, this is a while back, of like, what are the most successful financial advisors? Like, where do they come from? And it's not socioeconomics. It's not all these other factors. It's time in front of clients. Mm. So if they can see our advisors communicating with actual clients and then getting to do the sales ops roles and the service work, we found they're going to become way more successful faster. The second thing we do is we do phoning sessions together. So it sucks to call people by yourself. And so we partner them with a veteran advisor, and they have two phone sessions a week, and they're dialing for new appointments, but it's a lot more fun to do it with someone that's been through the ropes and can give them feedback. So we believe in quick, honest feedback, and to be clear is to be kind. So give them clear and real feedback to help them communicate better, because it's about how you say it, you know, not just what you say, like you said. And so we put systems and processes in place to try to elevate their progression into the career way faster than if they were doing it by themselves.
Yeah. I love something you said there, like even in meetings, when they're in the meetings and you have somebody that's been with you a little while, to, as you're preparing for that, saying, hey, why don't you go ahead and when we get to this part of the meeting, you lead it. And because it's you learn different if you know you've got to be the one. Right. You sit back, be entertained. If you're not the one, you take notes. No, yeah, I've been through all those.
I don't know if I'd be entertained. I'd just be like white knuckling my chair, like, don't say anything, don't say anything.
it is so
push him off the whiteboard and get over
that. Oh yeah. Don't say it. Oh, he said it like that. He said you're always there as like the co-pilot if it really starts to, I think what he meant was, you know, you can jump in, but we found that to be enormously powerful. And frankly, it's sometimes fun when you're not the one that's like driving it, because you can see things you would have never seen. If you're flying the plane, you're not flying the plane. You're getting to observe differently. And I've invented new language. I have new ways of saying things. And, same thing. Some of the things we do for even on the, what do you do? Answer that question. And on like them leading specific parts of client meetings, I'll tell them, hey, do a loom recording of you saying this thing to someone. Now you're going to send it to me. But before you do, I want you to do this. I want you to watch it first without sound and just look. Do you look weird? Are you doing something? Like I don't know if I use my hands, you know, Ricky Bobby, you know, deal. And then watch it with sound only, no visual, and listen. Do you have a lot of pause words that, and those things, does your voice trail up at the end of these things, like you're preaching a message that's in a church you don't want to be in, you know, whatever it might be. And what are your mannerisms that you notice? Write those down, the biggest three that you can work on, and send that to me, and then I'll tell you my thoughts on it. That way you can get a lot of reps in the simulator. Mm-hmm. And again, we do this with our class too, but I can tell you how few people actually do this work, because it's hard. Well, if you want to be in this business, you're going to do that. And I'm a safe place like to do this. So mm-hmm. I think those are amazing ways to do it.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Well, I want to walk through, I think you guys have seen this visual before. We call it like the prospecting spectrum. So I do think as you get more established, that this referral momentum does pick up, and it's the thing we wish we all would have had on day one. And there's probably people listening now that are like, hey guys, that's great for you. But we've been through all the other seasons up to this point. So I want to kind of like go back in time and like unpack some of these other options. So first one we talked about was brute force, which we've all been through. It's like at some point you just need to manufacture business. You know, this is, you're driving to someone's house on Saturday night, like inside, you know, I should not be doing this long term, but I need to do it today.
Right.
So I try to hold space for brute force. I mean, there's even times where I'm like, hey guys, we're going to do a power 2 hours together. Let's go through our old leads and like just have fun cranking it out and catching up with people. That has nothing to do with like a marketing flywheel or a seminar thing. It's like, no, we're just going to manufacture some activity real quick. But I know for my business long-term, for not to be dependent on me, I do need to have systems or other things in place that can generate attention. So one of those would be your existing network. How do you both, Gavin, we'll start with you. How do you look to your existing network for business, or is it more of, hey, those people know what I do, and if they need help, they call, and I'm happy to do it?
So existing network, not clients, like personal network?
Yeah, you're out and about, you have friends, college buddies. Like how do you go after it, or do you stay away from it?
I actually leverage it to get business more than to get clients or get them as a client, but leverage the relationship that I have with them, even if they're not a client. I think a lot of times they want to help you like meet somebody, but it may not be like their season to become your client. Then you teach them that in your program is like, they might not be a buyer today.
Yeah.
Right. But they're your friend and they're willing to help. And I think sometimes we burn that friend relationship too fast trying to make them a client.
Sure.
Versus we could just use their network of people that they know that we want to get introduced to and not bother them about being a client. So I think that's good for like younger people.
Yeah.
I do that a ton like in today's world because some people like, I don't want to necessarily work with them either, but I do want to use their network if I need to.
Sure.
And they're willing to help because we're friends. So, and it's just an easy, low ask.
So there's a way to leverage the relationship without trying to get them as like a headcount to win a trip.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. Yes, that's great.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's exactly what for me, I was actually worried. I didn't have many people in my network with money. And I was like, man, I could go squeeze something out of them because they love me. But it just didn't feel as good as like, hey, this is a stranger, doesn't know my past. Like, and so for me, maybe this wasn't the best way to do it, or I waited too long, is I waited a long time to tap my existing network or even let them know I even had room for clients. And then what happened eventually was they started coming to me and asking for help. And for some reason in my headspace, I was like, that feels better when they asked me as opposed to me pursuing them. But I feel like in my story, I did wait way too long to utilize this trust in this relationship. So no, I appreciate the way you're doing that. Wes, what about you?
Yeah, well, so you talk a lot about and teach on this as well. Just be great at creating delivering value and communicating with people. And so when you're with my existing like sphere of folks that we run with from the very beginning, there's that great Stephen Pressfield quote: "Most of us have two lives, the life we live and the unlived life within us, and between those two stands resistance." I believe that's so true of everybody out there. And ultimately we get to be curators of human flourishing in their lives. We get to help them remove that or dance with the resistance so they can get to that other life faster. And so when you can carry a handful of conversations like that, you know, are just going to be valuable to a person, whether that's a friend, a stranger on an airplane, whatever it is. So I always have about 5 to 10 of these things that when I know anything about the person, and you're talking and you're saying, well, hey, man, this is a great question that I think is, man, what's lighting you up these days? Like, what are you excited about that you're working on right now? And they start going and then you're like, yeah. They're like, well, Wes, what about you? Like, what are some of the things? And I'll say, well, let me tell you about this family we helped the other day. And I'll give them examples of things we did. Oh, we did this, you know, they were gym owners. This is a real one. They were owned this gym and they were leasing the place forever. And I said, hey, have you ever thought about buying it? They go, we don't think we can afford to. And I said, well, I mean, I'm looking at everything. You can, you know, with the down payment. And I said, and actually, I think we'll run the numbers for you, but with cost segregation and accelerated depreciation, and it'll actually cost you less to own this thing after about 3 years than you're paying right now, and you own the asset. And here we are, you know, we've done this over and over again with clients and just seen that add value. And so it gets them going, wow, these guys are up to something. Mm. And that's really what you, up to things that are valuable. Mm-hmm. And you want to be around valuable people. You want to work with valuable people. And so I think just deciding in your heart, what is like deeply valuable that you do that you can carry in a meaningful conversation with anybody? And then start out with that, hey, what do you, most of them end up becoming clients of ours. Not now, like Gavin, what he said earlier, I love, because it's like, look, some people, it's a long road, you know, just based on maybe where they're at. But guess what? If it takes 5 years before they finally go, hey, man, can we actually meet and get, you're going to want more clients in 5 years. You're sure. Gonna, you know, so you've just kind of put them dance through those layers, and some will be instant. So I would just say, be super, like if we were sitting today and you were going to ask me questions to say, how can I add value to Wes? What is that conversation like? And master that. And that's some of the things that we teach, that you teach as well, Stan, is it's so big.
Yeah, the idea around, I think even if you put some boundaries on it, I'm thinking about this for some of the younger guys I have, is like, I want you to have 3 prepared conversations. Like,
yeah.
Open a conversation in a way, like there's a way to be interested. There's a way to like add value to the world without feeling salesy. Because I hear you say that, Wes, I'm like, man, how many opportunities did I have to show my excitement about what I did for a living where my mind was saying, man, if I talk about this, it's going to feel like I'm trying to sell them.
Yeah.
And it was probably a function of how I got into the business where I'm like, man, every conversation had to be like get referrals or close business. And then I just like overreacted. And it's probably not been until maybe the last 3 or 4 or 5 years where I'm like, I've actually practiced communication where it's like, man, if you say something the right way with excitement, it doesn't feel like you're selling. It just feels like you're sharing.
Yeah.
But if you say it with some nerves and a little hesitation, people are going to be like suspect. Like, what's going on here? And so I love the idea for everybody listening. Like, do you have 2 or 3 prepared conversations, not prepared to be fake, but prepared to be, man, if I get an opportunity, you know, I know faith's important too. It's like, man, if I got an opportunity and somebody would say like, man, I'm in a tough spot. Like, have you ever been through something like this?
Yeah.
We should probably be ready to talk about it and not be like, oh no, I didn't think this would ever happen. Because I think the person's going to sense that.
You bet.
Yeah, that's a good word. Existing clients, how do you guys, how aggressive are you guys? And I think with all these categories we talk about, there's an average way to do it and an elite way to do it. Average is like, oh, hey, by the way, do you know anybody? And then there's, you know, a whole different level where it actually works routinely. Yeah, but how do you guys approach existing clients and referrals? Is it like a soft ask, or do you guys say, tell us all, everybody know?
Yeah, so I think the value of like joining the Highland Wealth is our sphere of influence is probably a lot larger than the advisor joining us. So we don't need their relationships. We need you to help us with ours. And if we can provide a lot of value, part of that, I think people will nominate us to, you know, start a conversation with someone else. And we just do that work for them through identifying our target market. So we work with, you know, 2 main segments of the marketplace, like oil and gas industry that's retiring, and then business owners. But that oil and gas space, I mean, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of people right down the Mississippi River where we live that need financial help, going to retire from a plant with a couple $1 million and need to replace their paycheck with that money. And so we identify those people, we connect them to who we know, and then we ask those people, hey, would you mind an introduction? And the vast majority of time they say yes, and that introduction happens, and we get a ton of new advisory households that onboard into the firm every week. And we have a flywheel now that just like we have a system and process that we follow, and it really works. And then for like the business owner space, that's a more organic, more like, you know, introductory to personal networks and things like that. But I mean, I would find a niche that you work really, really well in, identify how you can help those people, know more about their like employment package and retirement package than they do, and then just bring value. And then they end up raising their hand, come clients.
Yeah.
And like you did that disability thing at Vandy, right? When you started at Nashville, like go find an area that you can help. And then just that makes it a lot easier to prospect into those markets.
I had a buddy back in the day, their firm, they said when a business owner would come on as a client, they would say upfront, like before we work together, if we essentially follow through with what we're saying, you will send out 5 letters on your company letterhead to your business owner friends recommending us. And they said if the person said no, they wouldn't take them on as a client.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, really dang. Like, I don't know if I got
it. It
worked for them and their niche. But I think it's the idea of like, do we want to work with the type of people that if we add so much value, we'll want to talk about it? Or are the people we're working with trying to keep that a secret for some reason? And how do we coach them up on it? How do we train them to like, here's how to ask, here's who to look for? So I think for everybody listening, if you feel like you're not getting referrals from existing clients, it's not probably because they aren't willing to, or it's just not, they don't know anybody. It's either they don't understand the value you're bringing and how it could help other people, or maybe your system is not teaching them how to do it.
Well, Sten, I got a good point. And then, so my partner, Jeff, like came up with this forever ago. It's, I can't tell you how many times I've gotten told, hey, I referred you to Sten. And guess what? Sten never called me.
Yeah.
Now what we tell clients all the time is like, hey, you know, if you ever think of anyone that, you know, would enjoy working with us, why don't me and you brainstorm and we can work on a way of how best to get introduced. Mm-hmm. And that's led to so many like just organic, like, hey, Sten needs to work with y'all. Like, let me, and then they call us and we're like, okay, well, why don't you send an email and put me on there and then it gets started.
Yeah.
But people aren't day to day thinking about how can I best refer Gavin to clients. They're worried about the million other things they're worried about.
Their life.
Our job, in my opinion, it's our job to do that work for them.
Yeah.
And then get it to the, you know, 1-yard line and just have them punch it in.
Yeah.
And, but also like the caveat to that is like, I got into a season where I was like, man, I'm going to let the market dictate how large I'm going to get. Mm. And I was like, the heck with that. Like,
yeah,
we want it. We got these lofty goals, a big vision. Like, I think we do a really good job for clients and perform a really good service that they need. Like, we're going to go to take care of it ourselves.
Yeah.
Like, Apple's not waiting around, you know, like they're like going to gain market share. So we're going to gain market share.
Yeah. Are you guys going to, expand into Austin?
Austin, no.
Good. Wes will eat your lunch. No, I'm kidding. Austin,
we got more than we'll ever get to. Come on. Come on. It's...
Austin is way too cool for Hallowell. Just
that's right, yeah.
Ironically, most of my clients aren't even here, so that's okay.
He's not even playing in his backyard. He's going all over the country.
I'm in all your cities.
Wes, my clients hunt and fish and loving every day, man. We ain't...
Man, well, we're talking about fit perfectly.
As an advisor, I'm always curious about what is the path that most people don't choose. It may be the most difficult and challenging, but it will get me to my goal faster than everybody else. So we are launching Elite Plus. This is the community for advisors that really want to engage. You get to hang out with me a couple times a month live, asking questions, trying to grow our practice together. You'll get for free our financial planning software that'll help you deliver a better financial planning experience to your clients. You'll have access to Q&A cohorts with other advisors, and you'll have our full library of resources. This is for you if you are ready to go all in. If you want to be challenged to grow, you need to come hang out in Elite Plus. Join the Elite Plus membership today. Visit gobeelite.com and experience the program that transforms advisors into leaders.
Well, before I know, we're getting close to time, but I want to talk about when I was a young advisor. I think some of these things always felt like, man, someday I'll have enough clients to give me referrals. Hey, someday I'm going to build this network of people that actually have money that can help me grow my business. But it felt like that was like down the road. And I know in my business, Gavin, you mentioned the Vanderbilt example. Like, I just needed something today that if I put effort behind it, short of like cold calling out of the phone book and just full brute forcing it. And so over time, we call it targeting strategies now when we teach it. Is the idea of I have something I know somebody else needs. And to your point where you're like, hey, know more about their benefits. A great targeting strategies is get the benefits packets of the 10 biggest companies within an hour of you and read them. And I don't care how you have to get that benefits packet, find an employee and buy it off them, like at all cost, because that's gold if you can read through it, because you're going to most likely find one or two things that are underutilized, people don't understand. And then you actually have something to give that person when you talk to them, as opposed to, you know, hey, my name is Sten. I know you've never met me before, but you should give me all of your money and let's hope this thing works out.
Yeah.
I think is how most advisors are still prospect.
Yep.
And we all laugh when we say it. We've all done it. But as you guys hear targeting strategies, I know we've kind of jammed on this before in person and stuff. Like, what are you guys doing where it is like, I know enough about a group of people. I know some pain points and I know how to present it for them to be like, wow, no, you have something to give me, as opposed to you're asking for something from me. Wes, how have you gone about that?
Yeah, it does tie back to referrals too on this, is that even with existing clients, you know, we do mid-years and year-ends. And with those mid-years and year-ends, there's patterns, right? If you have a guy who owns a business and he's made up like this, there's like, I see that and I see eight things that I know he could do that's going to make his life better. He's going to make it better at life. He's going to save a ton of money. And so when we go through those, and then year end is always like where we're mostly going, hey, did you do all the tax stuff we talked about? Let's estimate your liability for the year. And then let's see if there's anything else that may fit in uniquely to this year that wasn't a part of what we built for you. And then we show them, we say, man, look how much money that's not going to go away, the tax system for you that was going to go away. And they're like, oh, this is great. And so, yeah, imagine how many people in your life, they don't even know, and they're going to have money go away that wasn't there. Anyone in your life that you love, wouldn't they want to know this stuff? They're like, oh yeah. So we get tons of people, new clients inflow from that every year. But I think mastery of those, like if you had three conversations, you know, and for any, for the W-2, for a person just in general, because people all kind of have, they got a vision that they want to live out. They got a place they're starting from. They get past they've been from. Having some conversation that really helps them feel like you're a fuel to getting them to that next place is so useful and so powerful. And taxes are just probably the easiest, most affordable thing. Because so
for business owners, yeah.
Yeah, it just super is. And so, but like your thing, you know, I mean, it's, I think anything you can do to say, what is valuable that people don't know about? And can I then just go try and figure out ways that's not odd or weird, it's comfortable to deliver that value?
Yeah.
I think it's a big deal.
That's good. Gavin, when it comes to the oil and gas, are those W-2 typically?
Yeah. How do
you guys communicate? What are you usually pointing out to them? Like, what are they usually missing? Because tax stuff, there's so much on the business owner side, it's very ripe. W-2.
Yeah, so we do tax planning, tax strategy, or tax observance with them, however we got to say it in our world we live in.
Lines, yeah.
Nice. It is a holistic plan for all of our clients, and we really get in a posture of education for them. And so we get to teach them how do the taxes actually work, because they all tell me they're in the top tax bracket, but they're not.
Nice, yeah.
And then we can, because everyone thinks they pay a lot in taxes. I've never met anyone that thinks they don't pay a lot in taxes.
Yeah.
And so we get in a posture of education with taxes. And so the second thing we do that with that is like, okay, should you be putting in a Roth or traditional in your 401k? Should we be creating after-tax money, because we can do Roth conversions when you retire? Mm-hmm. So there's a ton of tax planning for those W-2 guys and gals, you know, right before retirement, even 15 years before, if they're setting up their money the location of their money is properly allocated.
Yeah.
And then once they retire, talking about Roth conversions and legacy planning and that kind of stuff. Yeah. So there's just a ton of opportunity in that space.
What do you find? Because at times I challenge myself and other advisors, like, put your marketing hat on. Are you guys approaching that as like the four things that everybody at this company needs to do to avoid? Like, how are you getting into an education posture? And is it a pretty tight system, or is it kind of different for every person?
Yeah, I mean, it's referred lead, meet, and then we have our process that we take them through.
Nice.
And it's, you know, it's, I mean, it really is like, you know, the same thing over and over. It's just, you know, just a different person on the other side of it.
Yeah.
But there, a lot of them aren't different. So it's easy to run through that system and process that we created, but also you can custom, it's like the Starbucks thing, right? You can customize it a lot easier if you have a system and process.
Sure.
So like, good. We can do a little bit of special something for Jeff versus Joe, because like, we're going to follow the same process and it's not just all over the place. And then like the tactical thing that you were talking about, like, we look for money in motion opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And so the biggest game changer in our firm is we are looking out into the marketplace and saying, okay, what events are happening that are creating money in motion opportunities? And so, example, last year, Miles, who you know well, he found a energy company that was selling to a private equity company that we know. And we got $35 million of money in motion because pensions got paid out lump sum. They got to roll over to an IRA. They got to move their 401ks to IRAs early because they started a whole new plan. And so that was a money in motion event that we got to market to.
That's great.
And so we find opportunity of companies that are selling, and then those employees have opportunities to do things. We got very intimate with the new companies, you know, benefit package with the options that they had. So
Are those 401k providers? Because I find there's a certain size company, and then it's like, oh, Fidelity, Transamerica, and they have somebody that comes and teaches a class. Do you guys have to overcome and say, hey, we're an additional education arm to that?
We didn't have hardly any, because it was just like this force of like, Joe works with Jeff, works with Bob, works with, you know, Andy. Yeah. It's just like, it doesn't stop.
We're in it.
That momentum helps. And it's, I think a lot of our world is this proof of concept.
Sure.
Like, that's what I would argue over anything, is like, everyone just does what their friend does. Like, Sten, if you tell me, like, if I'm coming to Nashville this weekend, I'm like, hey, dude, where should I go eat? And you tell me where to go eat, I'm probably just going to go there.
Yeah.
And so a lot of life is just proof of concept. And so I lean in heavily on that through referrals. It's like, oh, my buddy Sten's doing this, so might as well hire you to do it.
Nice.
I think we overcomplicate it way too much.
Sure.
Like, yeah, it's so not that hard of a business. It just takes a lot of energy. An effort, just like every business on earth, by the way.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
I love that part. What you said. Yeah, because one of my favorite quotes in the world was from Ben Feldman years ago. He said, You know, we start this business in a state of starry-eyed enthusiasm, and then we educate ourselves to a place of sophisticated confusion. And the best advisors in the world continue to figure out ways to emerge to mature simplicity. So, you know, don't overcomplicate it. Learn one really powerful conversation that you can carry around with. Then learn a second one, then a third one. You know, it's like, but I gotta get a better website. I gotta send these birthday cards out. You know, nobody cares about your birthday cards or your website if you don't have something valuable to deliver. We're five valuable things. If you got on your list anything you could do, it is by the end of this month, you know, one very powerful conversation that is so value creation. And then you can add a second, and you can add a third, and you can add a fourth.
That's good.
Yeah, Wes, I think your whiteboarding sessions is a good place for advisors to start. Those like simple concepts, learning how to whiteboard, learning how to teach to prospects, going to learn like 3 to 4 of those, go to the marketplace with.
Go add value.
I think it's worse for people.
That's great.
Not to plug your stuff, Sten. You actually did that.
Nice.
So. No, well, there's going to be some commercials in here. Do that for it.
We're all just good hype people for each other. I love it.
That's right.
How about that new fancy music he's got in the podcast? That is hilarious.
Dude, do you know how much that licensing music cost? No, I'm just
kidding. Can't remember.
Dude, I appreciate you guys. I think for everybody listening, I love, Wes, the idea of like you are in a system, whether you inherited it or you're choosing it. Yeah. And I think, Gavin, to your point, it's like the system doesn't have to be sexy. You don't have to keep reinventing it. But I think there is a way to do it better than maybe the average advisor might do it. And so whatever system you're using now, I would say audit it. Is this the one you chose and is it working? And then if you're like, no, this is the one, I think, how are you dialing it in? How are you leveling it up? Because I think it's one of those things, you are part of a system, whether you know it or not, and at least you can recognize it's happening around you. Yeah. And then you can actually influence it.
Wes, we almost got him to go like 46 minutes, which would have
been
a record.
I'm cutting you guys off, man.
I'm asking him a question or something.
He knows if I could get him to an hour, dude.
I'm going to turn this into 4 episodes. This is 4 separate episodes.
This is... He did that to me on the last one. It was like, dude, in the middle of the
conversation. Leave you one more, bro. All right, boys. It was good to see you guys.
Good to see you, brother.
All right, thank you, guys.
Talk later.